AOC was absolutely livid. And when I say livid, she was livid. And she went on this whole tirade about how Trump is broke. And she even decided that she wanted to speak on what was happening in Congress as far as Marjorie and Jasmine Crockett going back and forth, because, you know, she was a part of that whole back and forth exchange also. But she had some thoughts. And of course, you can see that MSNBC made Trump a little bit more orange than usual. But she had some thoughts about Trump appearing in one of the most impoverished parts of New York, which is the Bronx, and him rallying the people to the tune of more than 25,000 people. Take a look. I always like to get the other side of the conversation, so take a look, y'all.
Joining me now is someone who does actually represent parts of the Bronx, Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's good to see you, Congresswoman. I should note the rally is technically in Richie Torres's district, just to be clear on the district lines. What do you think about a big...
It's a shame that a girl as pretty as her is as toxic as she is. This is why I say pretty girls ruin lives. Listen, we're going to make that a thing. And when it blows up and when it becomes super popular, know that it came from me. It's documented on my Twitter timeline. You ain't heard nobody ever say it before. Pretty girls ruin lives. It's no reason in the world that a girl as pretty as she is as toxic as she is. So much so, it be dudes that be saying, yo, man, I'll crash out over AOC. I know you would. I know you would. Let me tell you something. Pretty girls ruin lives. That's my slogan for the rest of the year. Pretty girl. Matter of fact, I'm about to put that on my Instagram as my bio. Pretty girls ruin lives. Absolutely, they do.
Donald Trump rally in the Bronx.
I mean, I think, as you mentioned earlier, this guy is stuck in court. And let's be very clear about the fact.
I got some new merch that's coming out. I was trying to figure out what was going to be my launching merch, but it's going to be called PGRL. PG, don't steal my shit. It's Friday. I'm cussing today. Don't steal my stuff. PGRL, pretty girls ruin lives. That's going to be the first. It's going to be the first one.
That he is stuck in court because.
I'm going to do pre-orders. I'm about to set up my Shopify. We're going to do pre-orders. It's going to be the very first merch. I'm going to drop it first in the Patreon. Then I'm going to make it available for the general public. PGRL. Yeah, let's get it, y'all.
Over hush money payments for to in order to quiet the story about him having sex with Stormy Daniels in the lead up to the 26 in the lead up to the election. And I think that because he is stuck on so many charges around fraud and these payments, he is stuck.
Give me a week. I'm gonna have it set up. Hey, where Bitcoin Brown at? Bitcoin Brown, set that up. We're going to do pre-orders, and then we're going to drop the look, and then we're launching it within 2 weeks.
In a pretty tight radius of where he can go, New York City's blue, Brooklyn's blue, Brooklyn is blue, Queens is blue, the Bronx is blue, and he's got nowhere to go. And so he's decided to come to the South Bronx. He's broke. He needs to pay these legal funds and, you know, bussing people in order to get those donations so that he can funnel them to his legal fees is kind of his business right now.
I will say Crotona Park is quite nice. I think it once had a reputation for being pretty ragged, but it's quite nice. And I'm hoping that the many people coming down from Westchester get a moment to appreciate the beauty and splendor of our borough of the Bronx, which is indeed a beautiful place.
Well, I can tell you that the Green New Deal investments that we have secured through community project funds have absolutely beautified everywhere from Pelham Bay Park, Crotona Park, and Throgs Neck as well.
Spoken like an incumbent running for re-election.
Hold on one second. Give me a second. All right, let's get back to the show.
Let me ask you this, Congresswoman. We just had this news about Samuel Alito. And I think all of us are sort of, there's a little bit of sort of banging your head against the wall. Like, okay, what now? And a feeling like the affirmative decision to fly these flags feels like some form of taunting. I mean, he could just not do it. You could just sit in your house and write Dobbs. Like, you don't have to fly any flags. You got a lot of power. What do you see as your role as a Democratic member of Congress in a Democratic House majority with respect to this court, specifically Alito and more broadly?
Well, I mean, I don't even think that we have to wait until we have a Democratic House majority because we have a Democratic Senate majority. And this is a this is an alarm that I've been sounding for quite some time now. I think that what we are seeing here is an extraordinary breach and of not just the trust and the stature of the Supreme Court, but we are seeing a fundamental challenge to our democracy. Samuel Alito has identified himself with the same people who raided the Capitol on January 6th and is now going to be presiding over court cases that have deep implications over the participants of that rally. And while this is the threat to our democracy, Democrats have a responsibility for defending our democracy. And in the Senate, we have gavels. There should be subpoenas going out. There should be active investigations that are happening. And I believe that when House Democrats take the majority, we are preparing and ensuring to support the broader effort to stand up our democracy. But I also believe that when Democrats have power, we have to use it. We cannot be in perpetual campaign mode. We need to be in governance mode. We need to be in accountability mode with every lever that we have. Because we cannot take a Senate majority for granted, a House majority for granted, or a White House for granted. Every single minute matters, and we have to use our power when we have it.
Well, she also spoke on, let me bring this up real quick, what was happening in Congress between Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jasmine Crockett. Check it out.
Joining me again, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who sits on the House Oversight Committee and had that exchange with Marjorie Taylor Greene. In some ways, you know, there's a fair amount of theater and performance, I think, on Capitol Hill, but also I could sense in you in that moment, like, genuine outrage at what was being done. What is your takeaway from that moment and more broadly the kind of culture of the place that seems to cultivate those sorts of antics?
Yeah, I mean, well, first and foremost, I know that a lot of folks kind of saw these clips going around that were often highlights of what had happened. But a lot of that was a result of structural changes that Republicans decided to make in real time to essentially throw out the House handbook that, frankly, and the House rules for committee guidance and for committee conduct through a vote. There was actually a procedural vote in which every single Republican went down the line and decided to vote that the comments that Marjorie Taylor Greene, the disgusting comments that she made about Representative Crockett, were in fact above board and acceptable, which is rather unprecedented in the House. These rules are, they were established in the 1800s, shored up in the 1800s.
Wow.
After the caning involving Charles Sumner in the Senate, precisely designed to de-escalate a political culture of violence when things get too hot. And in fact, when I was a freshman coming into the House, the rules were so widely respected that there would be motions to strike a member's words, even if they just spoke in the second person and used the word you instead of the gentleman from so-and-so.
Right.
And so Marjorie Taylor Greene, her acting, you know, like the ogre in that role is not surprising. What is surprising is Chairman Comer allowing that to be the conduct of, and not just him, but every single Republican, surprisingly, except for Representative Lauren Boebert, actually. And I think, you know, the fact that she has been subject to so much vitriol herself may have to do, you know, may have something to do with the fact, it could have something to do with the fact that as women, we understand the vitriol that especially happens. And if you don't want to.
Why does it always come back to women? I don't understand that. Why is it always a woman thing? Why isn't it a decorum thing? We already know that these people was in the house being disrespectful, not doing what they were supposed to do, not doing their job effectively. But yet it's always a woman thing. It always comes back to the excuse as to why you can't do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. I don't understand that. I genuinely don't understand that. Why can't people just do what they're supposed to do? It makes no sense to me. And they always blaming it back on, you know, whether or not they're a woman and all of this stuff. Man, get your life together, bro. There's no reason why them people should have been in Congress arguing and doing all of the stuff that they was doing in the first place. It really shouldn't have been. And it's unfortunate. But let's continue. Let's keep going.
Catch any, then you shouldn't give any. And I think that's what Representative Green encountered on Friday. If you don't want none, don't start none. And if you're not going to
respect
the rules, then...
Really? Seriously? If you don't want none, don't start none? Are we really doing this? If you don't want none, don't start none. Seriously? Did she seriously just say that? Man, stop it, bro. If you don't want none, don't start none. That's what she just said. This is y'all representative. This is the person that y'all rocking with. These are the people. These are y'all leaders. Is this the person that y'all actually voting in over in the Bronx? Hey, Bronx, I'm disappointed in you guys. Bronx, I'm disappointed in you guys. Y'all are over here seriously taking serious a woman that said, if you don't want none, don't start none.
It's going to come to you.
You have been very critical of the Biden administration's policy on Israel-Gaza, although quite also strenuous in your endorsement of the Biden-Harris ticket and the importance of electing, sort of balancing those two. At the top of the list of priorities, are there specific actions, specific things the Biden administration is not doing now that it should be doing that they have under their control?
I think this right here is an excellent question, because there are things that are within our control when it comes to the bombardment and the outright famine that has happened, that is precipitating in Gaza, an unfolding genocide in Gaza. And there are things that are not in our control that the Netanyahu government is just barreling ahead towards. For example, I do not believe that it is constructive to invite Prime Minister Netanyahu to a joint address of Congress. And many foreign leaders use this opportunity to lobby the entire Congress and the U.S. government for their own needs or for a certain view of their priorities. And I don't believe that that's a constructive role for us to be playing right now. I believe that we should be more thorough in enforcing a red line at Rafah. I believe that while there was one...
Actually, I'm going to be honest with you. This woman is absolutely boring. I'm not sure why anybody is still watching and voting for AOC. I don't think that she's as intelligent as she projects herself to be. But I'm absolutely positively sure that she is not worthy of another term in Congress based off of her track record, based off of her stance on immigration, and based off of her jealousy of Donald Trump showing up in the Bronx. So that's my thoughts in a general sense. I don't really feel like listening to AOC anymore, to be honest with you. And so that's just my personal preference. Let me go ahead.